The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. And my co-host this evening is the well-known endocrinologist and internist, Bahamian Dr. Christine Parker Curley. Welcome, Dr. Christine Parker Curley.
Thank you.
She's been on the show several times. She's also a well-respected international book author. We'll speak about the book as well. And we have, by popular demand, back in the studio, I had this businessman who looks 50 years old and he's 83 years old. Mr. Peter Roker. He has 8 decades of experience, and we're going to talk about everything in the Bahamas, what we can do to better our Bahama land. Thank you again for coming, Mr. Roker, and you being a hit on the last show, and I'm sure this show is going to even be better.
That's my pleasure, okay? Thank you.
So at first I'd like to thank the public. It's when we're in this studio where it's hard to know who's listening, and I can't go anywhere any day without someone making some positive remark in regards to the radio show. And I am encouraged that so many persons are listening and they can garner some positivity from what we're doing. All right, so we're going to talk about everything in the Bahamas. So we're trying to get the wealth of information out of Mr. Peter Roker. And Dr. Parker Curling is a very insightful and brilliant woman. So she's going to be an excellent co-host this week. So we're going to talk about, let's talk about something that's always troubled me and something that I've always spoken about a lot on the radio. And that's essentially we're raising a generation of aimless men. Boys, teenagers, adult men with no purpose in this Bahama land, no guidance, no motivation, no hope for a future, a generation of men who fail to connect with society as a whole, men who feel socially isolated, they feel alone, they're consumed with despair and even depression, and we all feel the manifestations of that, whether it's a lack of them succeeding in educational arena, it's a manifestation of them contributing to the high level of crime in our society. So men in Bahamian society struggle in general just being emotionally expressive. They bottle up and internalize their hurt, their fears, their inner pain, and sometimes in general, they just explode. And that may be in terms of emotional or violent outbursts. That might happen in the classroom, that might happen in the playground, that might happen in the streets, that might happen in the church or in the home. I'll ask your opinion, Dr. Parker Curling. Where do you think we're headed as a society? Obviously, things are getting worse and worse. Crime is out of control. And unfortunately, men are the main cause for that. Why do we have a lost generation? It's a big question, but... Let's start with simple things. What do you think is going wrong with men and raising of our boys?
Yeah, this is a complicated issue. And I think we're seeing the manifestation of many years of perhaps a decreased presence of the authority and guidance of the male in the homes. And it's a reflection of so many factors, you know. So you know, role models, even when it's just passive modeling of behaviors and relationships and the way we see people relate to each other, you know, in particular contexts, this helps to shape how we think, helps to shape how we behave. So if what we are observing, even if we're not being actively taught, if what we are observing is not desirable behavior, then the thing that we will be emulating by default will be a complex pattern of undesirable behaviors that we now pass on to generations and generations to come. So we are in danger in many aspects. And I think we are going to have to do a lot of nation building. We're going to have to do a lot of nation building from, you know, from birth, leading up into early education, and maybe even some rescue projects for people who are currently in that adolescent, pre-adolescent, young adulthood stage where we have to intervene and find out, like you say, relate to these people. Where are the deficits occurring and what can we do for them starting today?
I mean, we are a deeply troubled nation where we see a triumph if by the end of this year we see 110 murders. And right. that's astonishing.
Right.
I mean, even in my youth, I can remember if it was 15 murders,
right.
that was a major thing. Now, if we go 2 days without hearing about a double murder or a drive-by shooting, it feels unusual, and it just becomes the norm. The horrors of our society have become the norm. Mr. Peter Roker, so you have seen decade by decade the degradation of our society, the crime overwhelming our society. Where do you think we're at fault? Where do you think we can turn things around?
Now, Dr. Pinner, I told you, don't call me Mr. Roker. Sounds too expensive. Okay?
All right, we'll go to Peter. Peter.
Let's go to Peter.
But the public want to know who I'm speaking to, so we'll say it a few times. Right? Peter Roker.
Okay. It's not so easy. Not as easy as that. It isn't the young people or those who have become middle-aged. It is also this type of society that we live in. And, you know, you've said it, my span of saying, I've been active, I would say, for 7 of those 8 decades you spoke of, right? And I can truthfully say, when you fast forward today, it is a hopeless situation. And it is not created necessarily by those persons who are misguided, who we call misguided today.
Right. They're
okay?
A product.
Our society, you know, when you choose the lead, you are taking on a grave responsibility. And the leadership we've had has messed this country up. And it continues to mess this country up. And there is not that many young people that I talk to, they've forgotten about us. We haven't written them off. They have written us off.
Agreed.
And it's not a question of throwing more things to them. It's a question now of correcting from the top. Correcting those elephants in the room that we ignore and expect people to follow suit. They're not following that suit. What they're following is the hopelessness of a situation and the lies and the misguided mentality. Because, you know, I have people who work for me, young people. I go to them, I squeeze them on their shoulder, and we talk. I don't talk to them. I talk with them. And I try to let them know that there's an opportunity out there for them. And I believe I'm getting through to them. Not that there's some grant available from government, but we need to put minds together across the board. And if there's something, all due respect to you, you're talking about all these murders. You're not talking about who's committing these murders.
Correct, yes.
And I will say to you right now, it ain't the people only in the street committing these murders. And we need That needs to be addressed.
And even if we have the perfect judicial system, we just don't have the capability to, let's say there are 100 murderers out there and we catch every single one of them. We just don't have the judicial capability to try 100 men every single year for murder. It's just, we just don't have the manpower. We just don't have the courts. It's maybe we can get away with 15, maybe we can get away with 18, but we don't have the capability, the capacity to put 100 men before the courts and get them their court date within a year and the court going within a year. It's just absolutely impossible. Then they get a court date for next year, and then it reaches 2 years, and then they have to get bail, and then people are being intimidated, and witnesses fall off to the side, and there's no more case anymore, and then 5 years later they go and commit another crime, and then the revolving door of criminals going in and out of the system with the delay of maybe being in remand for 8 months, 9 months at the time. And all they do is basically go through the university of criminality where they're surrounded by more criminals,
right?
And they learn how to be better criminals. There are too many repeat offenders. There's no way out of the life of being a criminal, because in this society it's hard enough even with a master's degree to find a job. How is someone who's been a repeat offender and went to jail for manslaughter or multiple armed robberies going to get a job? The first thing you ask for is a police certificate. And this society is so small, if you've been in a high-profile case, most people are going to know. They're going to know that name. They know that 5 years ago you were sentenced to 4 years in prison for such and such. You're not going to invite that person into your business. You're not going to invite that person into your home. And unfortunately, where is life going to be for them? There is no do-over. So let's try and prevent from 6 years old, from 7 years old, from 5 years old, those persons going down that road. And yes, as you mentioned, Dr. Parker Curling, we have a fatherless society. We have a matriarchal society. And I'll go back to, I'm sure you can speak about those, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, Peter, that almost every family had a father. They had the uncles, they had the grandfather in the home. The neighborhood raised the children. So your next door neighbor was as much responsible for your child as you were there for their child. So there was no waywardness, there was no lawlessness, because everybody kept everybody in check. Where a grandfather was someone to be feared. You didn't mess up, you went on the straight and narrow because you were afraid of the switch, you were afraid of the belt, you were afraid of disappointing your grandmother, you were afraid of disappointing your mother. Now nobody cares. It's a society that nobody cares what the consequences are. Where do you think things have gone wrong in terms of why is there no longer a nuclear family? Why is a nuclear family in our society so scarce, and why is it getting scarcer by the decade?
Mm-hmm. Don't look at me.
You've had the most experience, and I think you've had the most life experience.
Okay, I go back to saying that there's a mixture of certain oddities we're faced with, okay? And when I hear people say, I'm blessed, I want to drop to the floor. And when people would think they're privileged, I want to drop to the floor. Now, I can give you an example of something. Is where I own a service station, and the other day I was upstairs in my building, two-story building, looking down at the canopy and the forecourt. And I saw my son out there, who at that time was serving gas, you know, working at the station, which he had no problem with. And he had a dustpan with an extension on it and a broom and sweeping. Now, I was the most proud father in the world. Okay? But when we look at society, they would look down at that. They would look down at that. Because, oh, that's he's sweeping the floor. But I looked at it, I saw it for what it was worth. So we have all these people who feel they don't worth anything. You know, and so I relate those people, and I maintain it isn't their fault. Give you an example. Leadership requires certain things. My wife and myself, I was invited to lunch, fancy lunch, in our car. We drive from Carmichael Road at the time, Super Value out of Cable Beach, fancy area, sit in the car, a little AC, and have lunch, salad, right? And one of the most expensive schools on the island is right there. What do you see? White, brown, Chinese, darker colors, whatever. What are they doing? They're cleaning not only the inside of the school, they're cleaning outside of the school. And they have supervision. But you go and you drive by these government schools, which the taxpayer pays for, and you go and say, clean, pick up that piece of trash. I've seen people grab somebody's hand and shake their hand. Don't leave that on the ground. So discipline, and to be able to, for people to relate, if the people at the top are not relating to the people at the bottom and in the middle, then those persons at the bottom feel that being at the bottom is a sin, it's not a sin. It's really a way of life that they can start there and go there. And so the problem I have a serious problem, and that is that the system doesn't work. So when I go out there and talk to that young man or young lady, I know the problems they're gonna have. Now I might be brazen enough to get them through those problems, but it's a impossibility to get anything done in this country as an entrepreneur. Now, you tell, oh, we got this grant. What I'm saying is that it isn't one sector's fault.
Right.
Okay? And we all have to get together and really just brainstorm and say, hey, this is this fault, this is that fault, this is my fault. I believe that these young people, I won't mention the name, but a number of years ago, I met with who was the big person in crime. Normal person. Smart as the devil. But understanding that the system wasn't for him. So there's a multitude of problems, and they don't relate to the church. They don't relate to the judicial system. They relate to common sense discussions, understanding that the vision and the imagination that is required in any country, if we're dealing with this country, is not here. It's not, and we don't have it.
What do you mean by that? That the vision and the imagination that's required is not here?
Well, let me tell you something right now.
Mm-hmm.
As a Bahamian, as an entrepreneur, I have had the most startling opposition to everything I want to do. Now, I got a big voice, I loud as hell, and certainly, you know, what I can push through, many people will put their tail between their legs and walk away.
Ease of doing business, the ease of many things.
Impossible, totally impossible.
Why?
Well, you tell me why.
And then the most startling thing is, if you are successful and you open up a business and a second business, you're providing employment, providing gainful employment for multiple families.
Inspirational.
And I mean, the effect on society is going to be broadly felt.
It feels almost intentionally difficult.
Yes.
Like unnecessarily difficult in certain scenarios.
The mentality, you got a full stomach. You got a nice house to live in. You got a nice car to drive in. You cannot relate to the person catching hell. And so you got to talk about all these social services or this thing or next thing. You turn people into scrappers. You turn people in who will steal, because that's the only way they can get it.
Right.
Who will be abusive. That's the only way to get their point across. So we have got to correct this whole thing from the top, in the middle, and to the bottom. And I will, for one, will not go out there. I feel more comfortable in that environment because the honesty I see in that are people who really I know are being displaced by the ignorance of the people who lead them. Okay? And so what I say is this. It is not necessary. It isn't necessary. We are next to 600 million people. You are a notable doctor. You are a notable doctor. You're Bahamian. Right or wrong?
Correct.
That little baby being born is one of you. Is you.
Right.
I mean, we have the talent. Now, you didn't fall through the crack. But there was a lot of cracks along the way.
Yep.
Well, I don't want to give the impression everything is doom and gloom. There are a lot of young men, young boys, a lot of teenagers who are doing wonderful things and excelling and are highly motivated. And,
definitely, and I agree with you.
And doing great things. But then we look at it when you speak to them, and I see this more and more, when you speak to them and they're going off and doing this and they're involved in this and that and everything else and they're winning awards internationally and everything else, what is their ultimate goal?
Never to
come back to the Bahamas. That's their goal. And it's reinforced by their parents, their grandparents, their aunts, their uncles, their godparents. Don't come back to this island. Where are we going with the brightest and the best leaving us?
But where do they see themselves building a future? Where do they see themselves being embraced, being accepted, being put forth as something to aspire to, as opposed to somebody who's overqualified for this? Or somebody who, you know, you come back home, you might come with this particular sort of who she thinks she is.
Yes.
Now, you know, we don't do it that way here. So you can come back to a scenario that's hostile. You go, you qualify yourself. You might come back as, you know, somebody that is to somebody else obviously needed in a particular area, and you can go through all of the processes that exist, and literally be frustrated out of town. Literally pack your bags and say, I wanted to come. I've seen it. I know it. I wanted to come. I came. I applied. We don't have a space for you at this particular time. So I have a PhD in something we don't have here at our university or our this and all that. And I'm born and bred Bahamian. How is it that you do not create the spot for me to bring my expertise to elevate in a way that only I could contribute? Who is protecting their job? Who doesn't want competition? Who does not want to make the space? So the system in many ways is flawed, as we've already seen. But I suppose when we bring it back home to the young men, of course, you know, we want to heal things and address things from the top down and from the bottom up. But my question for you and the panel would be, what do we do now? So we have little balls of potential, right? And so suppose the nuclear family is challenged or not present in any great degree. You have said something very important. You said that the young people you work with, you don't speak to them, you speak with them. And exactly. If it's so important for the mentorship to occur in each little sphere in which you exist, if you can get one out of five people to accept that they have worth, to accept that they can contribute, to accept that they can be better, and if you could kind of combat that sense of hopelessness, that thumb, sometimes visible thumb that's pressing on you. If you could reach that one person and you reach your two and you reach your three, sure, it does not heal the systemic issues, but it allows you to function in a, you know, in an influential way in your sphere of existence. So many things are broken, but what are we to do?
Well, I think initiative of the government. People say, oh, the government can't do anything. No, I don't want the government to do anything. But for Christ's sake, let the people do something.
Okay.
Okay? And let's call a spade a spade. Let us look at imagination. Let us look and say, give the person the opportunity to fail.
Right.
Do not fail them before they have a chance to fail. And it's unconscionable that when you look at Over the Hill, but East Hill Club, Great Cliff,
right.
Good example. We may have talked about it before, right? That's Over the Hill, on the border, right? When I see the multitude of tourists going along Bay Street, they could be diverted to Over the Hill. Give some people pride and they'll protect their pride. A whole block of Over the Hill. You want to see that same little gang member get excited?
Yeah.
Let him make some money. Let him be doing something he can make some money, that he could feel that I'm creating that. And that doesn't exist. And when I say it doesn't exist, right? What we must do is to stop UPLP, UFNM, whatever, and get together as people who are not leadership, but people who are in society, and look at what we can do to not to throw money at people, but to throw inspiration, to throw ideas, to say, okay, you know, you're throwing this thing out of the window, the ball out of the window. You're going to get fined $500 for it. Discipline, you need discipline as well. We have no discipline. So you need a mixture of ideas, a mixture of truths, and start by one at a time. I know I've done that already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I've already started to do that. And it works. It works. I got people stopping me in the road and telling me, thank you so much. I'm a wealthy person today because of the discipline and the mindset. But when you look at things from a political perspective in terms of getting votes, right? Oh, use a Bahamian, you're going to do this. Oh, use a Bahamian, use this. Minimum wage, throw it out the window. Because if somebody can aspire to minimum wage, they get a big problem.
Right.
Let them aspire to buying something in China and selling it in Canada. Let them aspire to using their brain, which they will use if given the opportunity. Not getting the opportunity.
And then you'll have to look at the consequences of that. If you force somebody to pay somebody a livable wage, which I actually agree with, and there are no consequences to you hiring someone who's here illegally for half the cost, What are they going to end up doing? They're going to hire the illegals, and they're going to have a lot of people, Bahamians, who are going to be out of work because there are no consequences for illegal immigrants being hired. Very little. And it's rampant in our society. And there are too many Bahamians who are in too early in their life in a hole, financial hole. How many Bahamians have even $1,000 for a rainy day in their savings? They live not just month to month, not just week to week sometimes, it's day to day, just to make the bills. So they move this money from this place to that place, they pay this bill late, they pay that bill late, they rely on borrowing money from this one. Next week you have to lend some money to the cousin. There are too many predatory lenders out there who would take advantage of Bahamians. Credit cards, the interest rate is 21-23%. It's ridiculous. Too many Bahamians live their life based on the three credit cards that they always have maxed out. By the time, what is the motivation for a typical Bahamian who's a waiter, who works on a construction job? At the end of the month, they're looking for a salary, and by the time they get the garnishes and the loan deductions from the salary, it's maybe 20% of their total salary. There's no motivation to do anything. All they're doing is existing. And they don't see any way out of it. If anything happens where there's something that goes on in their life, where there's a storm, a hurricane, some repair needs to be done, something happens with their car, they're not going to be able to function. They're barely keeping it together. They're barely keeping it together. And there are too many persons who live like that. And what are they? They live in a state of depression. They live in a state of constant stress. That has its physical toll on an individual as well. Sleepless nights, depression, seeking solace and comfort in a bottle or in smoking or not even thinking about tomorrow and having illicit activities, going off and having binge drinking every weekend just to forget about the problems that you're going to have the next day. There are too many of us who are living a life with no future, no bright spark, no light at the end of the tunnel. And it's just getting worse and worse. And the numbers that are falling in that category are going up exponentially every single year. And the ones who are succeeding are the ones, unfortunately, the vast majority of them are not coming back. So the brightest and the best of our society, the vast majority of them, it's going to be England who are going to enjoy the fruits of that. It's going to be Florida, New York, Canada, Toronto, who are going to, the brightest and the best of our society are going elsewhere and they're not coming back. Where is our society going to be if this continues? And we don't have to even imagine it. We can look at other islands. Jamaica is like that. The best and the brightest are going off. That's the goal of a typical Jamaican student, is to study hard, succeed, get out, and then get your family up. We have a call coming in. This is Urologist Speaks. Good evening.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good day.
I'm good. I'm good, sir.
To two great minds, I see from what I said established from here, from what you guys are saying. As inspirational, as motivational to see that somebody even of their minds on the ground of the reality of what's going on in this country. And it sickens me, like the politician would tell me something before I overspoke myself. The gentleman in the studio with you,
Mr. Peter Roker.
Yes, you're a very intelligent man as well.
Well, that's why I have him on the show.
Don't flatter me too much,
you
now.
Like I say as well, both of you. You know?
And yeah, no, we can't just, like, we can't,
they
we love
keep
our,
lying.
We love our society.
They keep lying to the behemoths, and they know they don't have no plans in fixing anything in the Bahamas. Like, for me, we don't aspire to live in an ex-man country. I grew up in the U.S. I moved back home at will. I wasn't deported or nothing like that. I paid for my education. My parents paid for my education when I was over there. I didn't live for free. I didn't live on no free land. I didn't make no babies in the U.S., anything like that. I didn't send any of my Bahamian children to be born in the U.S. to be under Uncle Sam's care. You know, and it's just amazing, like how all these leaders, all these politicians come in with all these stories, and they know on their own, from the prime minister go straight down to the MPs, none of them can do nothing under the Westminster system to help the Bahamas or Bahamians in the Bahamas. That's why they're doing what they're doing. And we have become so infiltrated with foreigners that half of the parliament is foreign descent. The immigration board, the everybody, we are the minority in our own country. And like the gentleman spoke on earlier, if it wasn't this show, that we have foreign people in this country. She can't speak a bit of English, but I do a $700 job for $1,000 and something altogether. But she going to get a business license. I've been in business on my own for over a decade, right? And I've yet to been able to get my business license and become legitimate as I want to be. But how could these foreigners come over here and be so successful? For one, they live on foreign land. They live on free land. They save all the money they could until when they get integrated into society now, which we which we were the ones that kind of protested for, but it was all a part, it was all a game, a disillusion, because they was ever planning on integrating them, but when by the time they were integrated, they were at an advantage. Because, like you say, you are Bahamians living day to day, week to week, some month to month, don't even have $1,000 on their account. But by the time they come with these bushes, they get like $10,000, $20,000, $15,000 just to play with. Besides that, you know, every immigrant that comes over here, probably, I mean, that's before Bahamas, they'll pick up on the hustle and start importing them themselves. That every immigrant that came on a boat came with at least one or two guns and about two or three keys of coke, because if catch, you just get catch. They feed you and they send you back on a free ticket back to Haiti to try again. But if they land, that's like $1,000 putting their arm one shot for drugs that were the amount, street value, 15,000. I don't know how they do that much. But yeah, they keep lying to us. And I don't care if it's FNM, PLP, all of them lying, because under the Westminster system, they don't mean us no good. And besides that, the Bible says you can't have two gods. You see what I'm saying? So could imagine three. Because for one, you under the Westminster system, which is the British system, right?
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
You in bed with the Americans, right?
Yes.
And you sleeping with the Chinese on the side.
I see your
point. Be like hypocritical pawn stars, not even stars. Prostitutes.
You made some very brilliant points. You are correct. That's a lot of things that we need to think deep and long about. But if I always say, obviously, the government has some role in giving us a safe society, giving us a livable wage, giving us jobs, having an effective judicial system, having a competent educational system. But if we ourselves look within ourselves, within our own families, if we stop beating on our wives, if we stop having all these outside children, if we stop, we're the ones who bring in the immigrants. It's Bahamians who are charging them $10,000 each and bringing them in. We're the ones who are hiring them. We're the ones who are renting houses to them. So we need to take responsibility. If each individual loved their country, loved their fellow man, and wants the better for the Bahamas, we'll have so many bright lights that we can extinguish all this negativity and doom and gloom. We'll talk more about this on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, Dr. Parker Curley.
Cora, I look funny, all black up yesterday.
But she says she bumped into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody's business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call her text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone, so nobody can know what you saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day. We'll be right back.
This October, let's come together for hope, support, and strength.
It's the Sister Sister Breast Cancer Support Group Dollar Day, happening Friday, October 17th from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on the grounds of the Nassau Guardian, Carter Street, Oaksfield.
And the best part? With just $1, you can help make a difference in the fight against breast cancer. Every dollar counts towards awareness, education, and support for women battling this disease.
Come on out, drop a dollar, and stand with us for a cause that touches so many lives.
Join us on Friday, October 17th from 7 to 10 a.m. and let's turn every dollar into hope.
That's the Sister Sister Breast Cancer Dollar Day, proudly sponsored by the Guardian Media Group, Star 106.5, and the Guardian Radio 96.9.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host Dr. Christine Parker Curling, who is an internist and endocrinologist, and we have the pleasure of having a guest again, the well-known senior businessman and entrepreneur, and he's a community leader and he's very charitable. Let's speak about some positive things, all the charity that you're doing in our society. I know it was a year ago that I guess you were 82 at the time. You walked the length and breadth of this island trying to raise money for charities. Let's talk a little bit about some positivity and the positive things that you're doing in the community, Mr. Roker.
Well, thank you very much. Now, that really was very, very interesting, simply because it goes back to motivation, which I spoke about earlier, right? And that what I wanted to do was I wanted to do something that would generate effort versus reward. And so I said, okay, I will attempt to walk around New Providence. And I was soliciting businesses or whomever that would give me a penny per foot. One penny per foot. And I calculated 27, the amount of miles, 40 miles or thereabout, would that would relate to if somebody said, I'll give you a penny a foot for all the feet that you walked. And it was very successful because leading up to it, we met with a number of charitable organizations, Ranfurly Home for Children, the Salvation Army, Abilities Unlimited. But the big surprise was the morning of the walk that I went there on the roundabout of Fire Trail Road, Smiley Butler Highway, and Faith Avenue, and there were people waiting for me to go with me. And I want to mention two names. Z. Maycock, who is a marathon runner, you may have heard about him, and Gladstone Adling, okay? These were persons, among other persons, that met me there, and actually there were at least two persons that walked faster than I did, and literally, I don't think I finished the whole thing, I think I went about 30-some miles. They went the full mileage, and it wasn't two years ago. But in any event, it was very successful, and the idea to my mind about doing something in a charitable way requires imagination. And being allowed to speak about that, I would say that it's probably one of the most fulfilling parts of a person's life is when they can impact other lives and see that this in turn can motivate other people to join in. And the walk itself was very successful. The sign is still up. If you go around the route, you'll still see my sign there. And certainly, we intended, I don't think I'll tend to do it myself again, but it has motivated other people to do something similar.
Well, I mean, it's extraordinary. We talk about such an unhealthy society that an 81-year-old can walk 30-something miles. There are not many 81-year-olds, not just in the Bahamas, anywhere in the world without that kind of stamina and endurance.
So, I think there are many 31-year-olds.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's a mind, too. But you see, that is... The mind is so powerful. And when you look at the reverse effect, when you see, look at it this way. If Pastor Jones, Reverend Jones in Guyana, can get 1,200 people to take cyanide-laced Kool-Aid.
Right.
It shows the power of the mind, right? Now, that's the bad part of that. The good part is that being able to get people to understand if they don't do it, it's not going to get done. To get people motivated into making money themselves.
Right.
I mean, if a person would have the mindset and say that those soup cans can be labeled, can be taken off, they can be made into different things, they can be used. It's almost sacrilegious for me to throw away a bottle. When you think in terms of what that bottle costs, the container costs more than the product in the container. And so, where do we, how can we spread this motivation where Bahamians, young Bahamians, old Bahamians, middle-aged Bahamians will understand that they got to make it work. You know, when I went to the Family Islands years ago, Odd Island, I call them Odd Islands, right? And the people go up to the commissioner, Chief, Your Honor, and they just felt that this person was the king. And now the young people are saying, hey, you ain't no king, you follow you know what.
Right.
Okay, and you're doing foolishness, and you driving this big car, and you got this big mansion. And so we have to cross that border of motivating people. And I believe that we can do it. I believe that we can create that environment where Bahamians will understand, don't look in back of me for someone else to do it. You have to do it yourself. But we have to have the government, I always said, you get a foreigner coming here, you got a red carpet. Okay?
Oh, we see it ourselves in medicine, yes.
Okay, you got a red carpet.
Yes.
The Bahamian is an endangered species because we don't get that treatment. And I said over like a goat bleating. What we need in this country is a one-stop shop. I spoke to a young man on the Parsky dock the other day, and he took 5 years trying to get into business.
Yep.
Young man, got a wife, and 5 years. And so we talk about crime. So this is an intelligent young man, can be a good criminal or a good business person. It takes a smart person to do crime. You realize that?
Yes.
There's no dumb person doing crime.
Okay? Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so we really, this election, I ain't talking much longer about this, right? But I tell you right now, this election coming up, the elephants have to be recognized in the room. They're too large.
You made a lot of wonderful points, but as I said, we also have to take responsibility for ourselves. If each one of us is a good citizen, then we can have a nation of good citizens. But obviously, there's a lot in terms of, we talk about the health of nations, the wealth of nations. It's our own fault we're so unhealthy. We have too much of a sedentary lifestyle. We have too much in the way of non-communicable diseases. We don't go for our annual physicals. We don't exercise. You can speak more and more about that, Dr. Parker Curling, but that is putting a burden on our society. Money that could have been used for other things is used because we have so many diabetics, we have so many hypertensive, we have so many persons with heart disease and obesity. All the crime. Crime pays for a lot of criminals. It also costs a lot on our society on so many levels, not just financial, emotional, and physical, and on the fabric of society itself. Crime is destroying our country because of the cost of trying to control crime. I mean, to put somebody before the courts for...
Horrendous.
That might be...
Horrendous.
$300,000.
Horrendous.
That
horrendous,
same $300,000 we could have used to open up a community center and do positive things.
Right.
It might cost $100,000 to put somebody in prison a year.
And keep them in prison.
And keep them in prison.
Yeah,
we can use that same $100,000 and create wonderful opportunities for 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, and give them positivity and give them hope. I think a lot of your success came from your youth. You had entrenched in you something that had a burning desire to succeed, a work ethic that you would have to admit very few Bahamians have. And that's also a problem in our society. We have a very poor work ethic. And the average Bahamian coming out of school do not have the coping skills to be a success in whatever job they enter or even in the educational arena. And that's a shame. But we have to look at it in terms of not just crime. We can raise the best children in the world. We can have the best nuclear families. We can all be in church. We can all be law-abiding. But if we keep letting in thousands upon thousands of illegal immigrants with no consequences who have wayward children and gangs and everything else, we're being overwhelmed with criminality because of illegal migration as well. We have to look at that as well. We have to look at that. And then look in the schools, the government schools. How can a typical teacher with the best heart in the world, the best skills at their fingertips to teach the children, and they have to teach 48 children, or they have to teach 45
who
children.
Who don't speak the language.
And 10 of them speak Creole. 5 or 6 of them have attention deficit disorder. 3 of them are juvenile delinquents. 2 of them are class clowns who disrupt the class every 5 minutes.
Impossible.
It's impossible. It's totally impossible. So the hardworking police officers, immigration officers, defense force officers, their children are in these classes with little hope of ever succeeding. And then some illegal comes in and their child is in the same class, dooming that class because the teacher is just overwhelmed. So we need to have, on all fronts, we need to find a solution because our society is going down the drain and is going down the drain very quickly. It's already become far too common where a double murder is every other day. And you know that these persons are not coming before the courts, even if they're caught with the weapon, with the bullets, right, on CCTV doing the shooting, they're going to be on bail in no time. And what are they going to do? They're going to be creating more crime on our society to pay for the high-profile lawyers to get off. The words cannot describe the disgust of some of the police officers who are on the front lines, who do their job, who put in the hours, who bring these criminals before the courts, and then the courts are open sieve that let everybody out. What do you think we can do in terms of creating a judicial system that is effective and creating a society where there are consequences for your actions?
That's tough. I think I ask a deeper question, which we touched on before. What can we do to prevent the mass production line of the criminals? So we're talking about, what are we going to do with these criminals? But if we're creating an effective system of producing them. So yes, we need to fix the judicial system, which has been in need, you know, for longer than we even need to express. But where along the line can we intervene to prevent the creation of this environment that breeds and nurtures the criminality? And some of it comes from hopelessness. Some of it comes from lack of access. Some of it comes from despair. Some of it comes from lack of resources. So this problem has so many layers. And like you, you know, said before, Mr. Roker, it's going to take integration, an amalgamation, a combination of systems and systematic changes.
Where are the days where hard days work for honest
pay?
And that's we have a far too materialistic society where we're looking for the easy buck.
Well, Dr. Pinto, you know, you both eminently qualify to understand that the diabetes and the heart problems and all those things that come along with the lifestyle right. that a lot of Bahamians have.
Well, I'll say crime and criminality are destroying our country at a greater degree than cancer, than diabetes and hypertension.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that because it seems when you're not safe, you know, when you're not safe, when you feel your life is tied to just being aware of getting hurt, it's not a good existence.
Right.
Okay, and it's
a stressful existence.
Yeah, very much so. And
we're living like we're own prisoners in our own homes. We're battening down our homes. We have the bars in our homes. We have the chain link fences. We have the guard dogs barking all night and keeping us up and keeping our neighbors up, but we're afraid not to have them. We have a sleepless, stressed out society because of crime.
Well, I gotta laugh, right? Because you know what? 20 years ago, I was talking about this, that society, our society in this country, is you let over the hill go to the devil.
Right.
Okay? And you start backing until you are at the edge of the harbor.
Literally.
And you gotta jump overboard. And this has been going on and on and on and on. So we have to, what has to get done is not some financial program to say we're going to pour millions and millions of dollars into this to whatever, right? But we have to go to the people who have a vested interest in this. And those people can be Bahamians, they can be anyone. See, anyone who lives in this country has a vested interest. And we cannot suppose they don't. Because when you do that, you see, I have to laugh. Who curses out the cook? I'm not gonna curse the cook out. Okay? No
likewise,
way.
Likewise.
I'm eating the food. So how we could be saying,
right.
No, hey, listen, we're in this thing together. When I worked in Germany for a period of time, I got a thick thing package, but this thick. Welcome to Deutschland. I got a permit. I had a medical test, everything else, right? But they welcomed me. But you can't go and say, you're a nasty foreigner. You're no good, whatever. And I would dare say to you, anyone here, for the size of our country, we could do with a couple million people. Now, I'm a business person. There's a fallacy out there, and you're a business person as well, right? But I was saying, why would I hire a foreigner if I can find a Bahamian? To think that a foreigner is cheaper is not right, not correct, okay? So what we have to hold on to, we have to hold on to the fact that we come from productivity. In other words, we win gold medals, we win silver medals, we win bronze medals, we qualify for the Olympics. So we can do it. But when we have this mentality that you in other words, look at it this way. You go to Inland Revenue telling them you can't pay your taxes. I tell you, that ain't our problem. That ain't our fault. So we have to do this thing in different categories. You have the entrepreneurs, you have the business people, you have the cultural people, you have the persons who want to make souvenirs. We have to be crazy about being productive and setting an example. And you will be shocked to know that once you grab hold of an idea and put that idea into effect, the amount of traction that idea can go. One of my ideas, and I still hold on to that daily, I met the other day from Nassau Village. He got a swimming pool in his yard. I met him, he came to my lumber company to get some old wood. So the group of people, boys, young people, this guy living in Nassau Village, come around. He's trying to get them to be productive and doing things. And he and I work together, right? So you go and touch his place. You don't touch his place. If you make people proud of something,
protect it.
They will protect it. Make them proud. Make them proud. Today I was dealing with a guy who was unloading a truck for me, right? He called me on the phone saying, "You gotta move the fill off." I said, "Move it." He said, "Well, I can get the other guy." I said, "No, you move. You got the guy busy. You move it. You move the fill off the truck. You." So I went on, saying, I said, "Listen, focus stomach." His stomach was not bad, right? I said, "Focus mind." He said, "Oh, it feel like muscle, right?" I said, "Yeah. You discipline. Discipline. That you talking about that? You talking about the mothers and the fathers are fine. But those who didn't have the mothers and fathers, they had one of your relatives, right? Donald Davis. Okay? Discipline. Whether you had mother or father, you had discipline. You have no discipline. You have the police coming knocking across your head.
Right.
But you don't have the discipline in terms of saying, you go to school in the morning, first thing you did, exercise. Who among us right now would go and tell a parent in a government school, free of charge, right or wrong, free? Government school, mm-hmm. free, right? To clean the school. Who would tell us that?
I think we have to look at the positive as well. The sky is the limit in this country. Nobody's going to hold you back.
Definitely.
You can get a wonderful education, even the government schools, if you are motivated, for free. You can go off and get your first degree at the University of the Bahamas for free. You can get scholarships and get your second degree anywhere in the world for free.
Totally
and unlike many other countries, the color of your skin is not going to hold you back at all. You don't have to deal with that extra layer of stress that African-American has to deal with or African has to deal with in the United Kingdom or someone from Jamaica has to deal with in France. It doesn't matter.
It's free. But do we appreciate it?
Not at all. We have religious freedom.
Do we appreciate?
Not at all.
Okay, but
I'll also say that immigration is fundamentally important for the success of our country in terms of, on so many levels, they can bring in expertise, they can teach the younger generation of Bahamians in certain specialist areas and create industries that they weren't here before. Some of the best teachers who motivated me and made me the person that I am were foreigners. My father has been teaching in this country for 50 years. He's done more for the Bahamas than most Bahamians, and everybody loves him and knows him. I can't go a day unless someone asks if I'm Alan Pinto's son. And I proudly say yes.
Right.
My wife is foreign. If it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be on the radio now. I wouldn't be anything that I am now.
Right.
And so I'm just saying that we need to have positive immigration. We need to do it the right way.
Organized.
We need to have organized, legal migration. And we have enough persons who are struggling. We don't need more immigrants coming on top of that or are struggling as well.
I couldn't agree with you more. And the thing is this, right? Let's bring this out in the open. The people who would run the country, who want to be king, you could have said, "Listen, sure, you don't need a computer for this. This country is moving this direction. What are we going to need in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, right? Where are we going to get them from? We can get Guatemala, Jamaica, Nigeria, Mexico, you know, and you create a diverse country. Okay? Not family coming calling you mama and papa, and not taking on the difficulties another country is having. We sympathize with these countries. I go and see the appeals out in Sudan. I feel for them. But we are a 300,000 people country. We can't take on the woes of anyone, anywhere in the world.
Yes.
So what we do is we have a strict setup and we diverse. You cannot let one culture be greater than your own culture. That's can't work.
You've made some brilliant points, and
as
I've said many times, you have so much to say. We're going to make this a Peter Roker series. We're going to bring you back because we're at the end of an hour that's gone very quickly.
We won already?
Yes. Already. We're going to bring you back. So let me ask my co-host, Dr. Christine Parker Curling, any closing remarks?
This has been educational. It's been informative. And I think we have to, you know, as the great leaders say, begin with the end in mind. Figure out what it is that we need to accomplish and implement the systems to make it happen. And so drawing on the past, drawing on the present, drawing on the wisdom in the room, I think it could help to guide us as to what we're supposed to be doing.
And I think, Bahamas, my takeaway is let's just do better. Let's look within ourselves and let's just do better for ourselves, for our family, and for our society. I think you're going to be here next week again, Dr. Parker Curling, I'm hoping.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we're going to talk about a very fascinating talk. We're going to talk about male and female infertility and polycystic ovarian syndrome. Thank you again, Mr. Roker. We're going to bring you back soon. And I know your time is precious, and I appreciate all your wise and your wisdom. Good night, Bahamas, and us have a safe and productive week.
With the help of God, man, we live.